Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today we're talking about herbs in pregnancy and postpartum. Herbs can be micronutrient powerhouses that support your immune, nervous, and endocrine systems, but some of them may not be recommended during this time of your life. With conflicting messages about what to take when, how should you approach these plants to figure out what works for you? Kathleen Mignolo has answers. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Expectful, an evidence-based guided meditation app created specifically for those trying to conceive, pregnant, or new moms. Learn more and sign up for a free full month trial at expectful.com/birthful. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by care.com, the world's largest digital marketplace for finding and managing family care to help make life easier. Go to care.com/birthful to save 30% when you subscribe. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. As always, thank you so very much for all the love you give the show. And if what you hear is helpful, then make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. While you're at it, feel free to leave a rating or a review. And if you'd like to further support this podcast, then do support its sponsors, who in this week's case are care.com and Expectful. Also, quick reminder that if you want to truly prepare for the big identity, relationship, and logistical changes that are coming your way when you become a parent, then go to birthfulcourses.com to sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. And you want to do it now before the baby arrives. So yeah, birthfulcourses.com. My guest today is Kathleen Mignolo, who I'm lucky, so very lucky to have as part of my personal village, and I am honored to have her on the show today to talk about using herbs during pregnancy and postpartum to help with health, recovery, and breastfeeding. And we're also going to be talking about what place these powerful plants may or may not have in case of inductions, group B strep, positive prevention, as well as dealing with nausea, constipation, and help with breastfeeding. So yeah, we're going to be covering quite a bit. As always, when dealing with recommendations of things to ingest while pregnant or breastfeeding, do make sure you bring this up with your care provider, bring them into the conversation, as we do not know all the particulars, and by we, I mean Kathleen and I, do not know all the particulars of your situation. What is right for most may not be right for all, so be smart. All right, here we go. Welcome, Kathleen. It is so lovely to have you here today.
Hi, Adriana. It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much.
And full disclosure, Kathleen lives in Rochester, New York, and we're good friends. She's a doula, and so we hang out. So this recorded conversation is going to be interesting because we're used to just chatting. So I guess we'll do a bit of that, right?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to chat. And usually that's how some of the good stuff comes out, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I love. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, to begin, I think my highest credential is being a mother of three. They're a wide range of years, 19 to age four. And then I began my herbal exploration as actually a Montessori teacher in Michigan. I had an assistant who was an herbalist and really turned me on to it. So that was about, 17 years ago, I started this journey, life exploration of plants and our birthright according to plants too. And then years went on, some midwife friend of mine said, you'd be a good doula. So I looked into what a doula was and decided that would be good for me. So I got my DONA certification, and then I went on to receive my holistic doula certification with WAPIO. Several years ago, I did my first herbal apprenticeship at Heartstone Herbal Academy. It's now called Heartstone Center for Earth's Essentials. Amazing teachers, Chris Milliner and Tammy Sweet. Tammy Sweet is by far my favorite A&P teacher ever. She has stuff online. You should check her out. Little plugs here. And then just learning from different herbalists throughout the years, and now currently working through Aviva Ram's Herbal Medicine for Women course, which I found is very enlightening and life-changing and requires a lot of discipline, but I'm happy about it. So that's where we're at now.
Fun. So a lot of different perspectives into herbs and specifically the work that's required for postpartum and birth and all that change of pregnancy in that fun stage of life that we love so much.
Yeah, where it's so fluid and everything's happening and changes happen so quickly.
Yeah. And one of the things that why I was so excited to have you here to talk about herbs is because during pregnancy, there is so much caution and limitations into what a pregnant person can use for their health in terms of, you know, for anything. So medicines, medications to ingest, and then herbs as well. And some people say, stay away from these teas and stay away from this and or use that. And I'd love to get your perspective into how should people approach the use of herbs during this time of pregnancy and postpartum?
Okay, well, to begin, I just want to say that in our culture, we are very conservative with the use of herbs. In several other cultures, there's food grade herbs that people just use every day. It's not so much of a conflict or confusion. But in our culture, the general, you know, population is wary about herbs because I think there's not a lot of actual double blind scientific studies done on the use of herbs and their effects on specifically pregnancy, pregnant women and babies. So the general rule is to avoid them, especially during the first trimester, just unless it's medically indicated to not ingest herbs at all. But we do have, you know, that being said, with the not a whole lot of scientific research, there's even pharmaceuticals that would fall into that category that people still choose to take and put into their bodies. So it's really a personal choice too on what you feel is safer and effective for you. You know, in doing your research makes a big deal. So you know, it's a huge rabbit hole to go down, actually. And a lot of the fear too, I think, surrounding the use of herbs is based on studies that have isolated particular constituent of a plant, an isolated compound, and then they've applied that in very large amounts and found adverse reactions. So chamomile is an example of that, which is a very gentle herb. And in 1979, they did a study where they isolated particular compounds and applied large doses to rats, uterine tissue, pregnant rats. And they found they had teratogenic effects. Now, this is a very gentle herb, and you could never drink enough tea to match those doses of this isolated compound. So we also, when we look at using herbs, look at using the whole plant as medicine and what that means, because there's so much to a plant where they play off each other and the different constituents in it help each other. So, you know, we need to keep that in mind as well. So generally, if you want to play it really safe, no herbs in the first trimester, but then getting into your second and third, herbs are very safe, but there are also categories of that, you know, so there are certain ones you definitely want to avoid and certain ones that you might really want to invite into your life.
So can we talk about what those are?
Sure. So where do you want to start? With no's or yeses?
Let's go with yeses.
Okay. So yeses. So I make a tea called Everybody Needs This Tea because it's good for everyone. But I really had pregnant people in mind because that's who I work with the most. And it was an assignment in herb school. And it has nettle, which is an amazing plant. I love nettle. I cannot sing its praises enough. And it has red raspberry leaf, chamomile, rose hips, oat straw, and spearmint or peppermint. So starting with nettle, it has the alphabet of vitamins and minerals, and including iron, which a lot of women experience iron deficiency during pregnancy. And this is one good way to increase your iron intake in an absorbable way. And I also got to say, I love teas because there's a ritual involved in it that gets you involved in your medicine and builds a relationship with them. And it also gets you hydrated, which we need.
And makes you slow down a bit too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is absolutely needed in pregnancy. So nettle is very nourishing and should be added in, I think, to a diet. It tastes a little bit like spinach. So if you need a flavoring agent, that's fine. So that's why I put this tea together. And red raspberry leaf, it tones the uterus and reproductive organs, not just for women, but for men as well. So red raspberry leaf is good for everybody, unless you have a particular aversion to it. And it also is loaded with vitamins and minerals, and including iron, which women definitely need. And then also in the tea is chamomile, which is a nervine. So it helps us to relax. It helps us to slow down, like we were talking about, and balances our anxieties, in which we all experience a lot during pregnancy. So I would say absolutely use chamomile. And again, you can't use enough of it to be harmful. And rose hips are in it, which contain vitamin C. It's one way to help boost your immune system, which is one of the best ways to maintain a healthy pregnancy when you're dealing with testing or UTIs or, you know, the possible consequences of just having your body squished and then being tested for things like GBS, you know, so that helps along with that. And oat straw is another nervine, which, you know, I can't emphasize enough to anybody in our culture in general, but to pregnant women as well, that we need to chill out and find ways to do that. And herbs are very, very useful for that. And then if you're experiencing nausea in pregnancy, adding peppermint to your blend just a little bit. And we want to take it easy on the peppermint. It does contain volatile oils that can cross the placental barrier, but small amounts are fine. And it does help with the nausea if that's something that you're experiencing.
Okay.
So that's like in a nutshell. And there's so many other herbs too that are safe and are yeses. But if you are going to, you know, use something to help you be nourished and feel well during pregnancy, that would be a good little encapsulated start.
And I think I was just going to ask you about the concept of nourishment. And you just mentioned how to keep you nourished, because we think of herbs as something to help us to, you know, to combat something like nausea or to help us relax. But this concept that our herbs can also give us nourishment, like you were saying with the nettle, of iron and different vitamins and red raspberry leaf tea, like, talk to me a little bit about this concept of having herbs as more nourishment in your day to day.
Okay. Well, prevention is our best medicine. So a lot of the ailments and things we experience are because our body hasn't gotten what it needed. And in pregnancy, that becomes increasingly so because you need a lot more to support this other life that you're carrying. So finding ways to proactively give your body things to work with, things that will help you feel healthy, things that will help you form building blocks of life. You know, that's nourishing. That's and also things that will help you to be calm and relaxed. That's nourishing. That's helping you to be healthy. So does that answer?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it goes back to the why. Why would we want to use herbs? And it's just another alternative. I think during pregnancy, we talk a lot about nutrition and the importance of eating well. But I think it's something that's being discovered more now, the importance of the micronutrients, not just your big ones of proteins and carbs, but, you know, little things like choline and iron. And the fact that opens a huge door to being able to use herbs to support that, I find fascinating, and something as simple as a tea and not necessary, and using herbs in that way and having that relationship with the plants, and not just have it be exclusive to taking a supplement, for example.
Right. And, you know, Michael Pollan, he cited in his In Defense of Food that we're the only species on the planet that has to ask, what do we eat? And I think that before we had to ask that question, herbs and plants were just a general part of the diet. There wasn't a thought about, you know, is this okay? Should I eat this? You know, it was just kind of what was available and what people did. So it was just kind of folded in anyway. And so now we have to make a conscious effort to reach out for the plants, because they're also not something that is provided to you, say, on your plate, right? So not necessarily a part of the diet. So why herbs? Why consciously think about putting them in? Because, you know, they naturally have a benefit to you. And these are things that women for centuries, millennia, have used and have found effective and helped them. So this is part of you being a person on the planet.
And yeah, and I think it does go back to this idea that we've, with birth, with breastfeeding, and with herbs, we've lost the knowledge along the way that was just embedded into our day-to-day realities. And then we have to make such big efforts to learn about it. Like breastfeeding, people would see breastfeeding happen just normally around them all the time. And that's the best way to learn and see about the struggles and how other people support the breastfeeding person. So now we have to make efforts to create that. Same thing with birth. You know, how many of us, including myself, had never seen a birth before giving birth themselves, right?
Right.
And then I have a different approach with plants, and it's very romanticized and it's very nostalgic for me because, well, having grown up in Venezuela, my nana who I learned to cook from just by sitting and watching her cook day in, day out. I would spend so much time in that kitchen. But she also had a normal, natural, sort of intuitive relationship with plants from the knowledge passed down through generations. So every time something happens in my house, I have the reminder of her words in my mind telling me like what to do. And so aloe plants were a constant around our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, we would eat like for upset stomachs, and also being in this tropical reality of Venezuela, the seeds of the papaya fruit, you don't chew them, you just like swallow them. They're great for helping digestion and balancing. So to me, like, that's the most natural thing. If my stomach's kind of not doing so well, I'm like, I'm gonna buy a papaya and have some seeds. And of course my husband looks at me like, what the right?
Whole plant medicine.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, I definitely want to like talk about those no's that we should stay away from during pregnancy. We'll be right back. Great news, mighty ones. Now, Birthful listeners can get a free month trial at expectful.com. That's 2 more weeks of free meditation than before. And if you've been meaning to try meditation, then now is the perfect time for you to jump on this offer. Meditating is a great way to reset your nervous system and mindfully bring yourself back to calm. And this is really important because if your nervous system spends more time in high alert and doesn't get to go back to baseline often, then your body is in constant state of stress, which is not healthy. Meditating is a super easy way to make sure you break up those stress signals. The best part is that you don't have to sit for long hours to see the benefits. If you have 5 minutes, then you have time to meditate. And it becomes even easier when you use a meditation app like Expectful. I have tried other meditation apps, and I really like how the Expectful one is designed to address your pregnant or new parent needs by focusing on whatever you need at that moment. Whether it's better sleep, connection with baby and partner, embracing your identity, lessening stress, dealing with uncertainty, Expectful makes it super easy for you. And I gotta say, I really enjoy the voice of the person who reads the meditations. Go to expectful.com/birthful to sign up for a free 4-week trial and check it out for yourself. Yep, that's a free full month to try it out. And don't forget to add the /birthful so you can get that free full month. So that's expectful.com/birthful. And we're back talking with Kathleen Mignolo about herbs and plants, medicine. Yay. So we talked about some of the things that could be really helpful for anybody. What are some things to stay away from during pregnancy?
Well, just to wrap up the yeses too, I want to say that culinary uses are generally okay, right? So like if a turmeric is, you find that on a contraindicated list, but you want to use a little bit when you're scrambling your eggs, it's not really a concern. So the same with sage. There's a lot of things you'll find like that. But also please source your herbs well, because that's another, that's a yes and a no. Please, yes, organically. Please, yes, good sourcing to avoid contamination. Don't just, the no is to not just willy-nilly get any possible herb that, you know, oh, this will be good for me. You know where it comes from. So on that note, mm-hmm. the no's, and again, there's a long list and there are varying degrees of no's. So some plants like arnica and comfrey are okay for topical use, right? And golden seal for topical or a suppository use, but you would not want to ingest them during pregnancy. And I generally say don't ingest those necessarily at all. There's a lot of other things you can do. So a very clear no list, though, that I could to absolutely avoid during pregnancy is blue cohosh, cat's claw, Jamaican dogwood, pennyroyal, poke, tansy, wormwood, black walnut, thuja, cotton rue, red clover. So most stimulating laxatives, anything that's teratogenic, any emmenagogues and abortifacients, toxic herbs, and high alkaloid contents. So all of those can have consequences. So you know, some of the language there, we all know what a laxative is, I think, something that moves the bowel. So a stimulating laxative can cause also contractions in the uterus. And so you want to avoid that during pregnancy, of course. And teratogens are chemicals that cause deformities in developing fetuses. So there are herbs that have fallen into that category, like the isolated compound of chamomile that we talked about earlier. But well, there are ones like thuja that are much more serious. So absolutely avoid that. Emmenagogues are plants that will bring on your blood. So they, like feverfew, which you are now familiar with, if you were taking that for a migraine cure or a headache cure prior to pregnancy, it is something you would want to stop because it does have emmenagogic effects and can cause, potentially cause miscarriage. Abortifacients are herbs that in the past have been deliberately used to complete a miscarriage or to bring on a cycle. And you would definitely want to avoid anything like that. So abortifacients like wormwood, that's really, and pennyroyal. And you don't see a lot of pennyroyal around anymore. It's gotten a really bad rap because some people died from just ingesting the oils of it. But the leaves, you know, are generally safe outside of pregnancy, but you just don't see a lot of it anymore anyway.
Well, and if of the list of things that you named, like the only one that I recognized was red clover. Thuja I've heard, but the only one that I'd say I've ever come across where it was like, oh, I'll drink this tea was red clover. You don't find very much of like thuja tea out there.
Right. And these are things you probably would be seeking out for very specific conditions. So you'd also probably know, you know, whether or not they're safe during pregnancy or it'd be something you looked into. Red clover is one that a lot of women use to try to balance infertility issues. So it would be something you definitely want to stop when you found out that you were pregnant. But it is useful up until that point, you know, and then after. You know, it has its purposes there, but it's an estrogenic, a phytoestrogenic herb. So it can upset the balance of hormones that's going on with the body. And I generally, you know, hold a philosophy of let things be. I mean, unless it's really indicated, just let the body do what it does and focus more on the nourishment aspect of it. But sometimes we need help.
Mm-hmm. And then with the nourishment, it's back to what we talked about of, you know, nettle, red raspberry leaf tea, chamomile, rose hips, mm-hmm. oat straws. I don't think I've ever heard oat straws before either. And peppermint with in small doses.
Right, right. And with anybody else, but especially with pregnant women, you know, a general focus and a lot of things, symptoms can be cleared up by focusing on supporting the liver, supporting the nervous system, and nourishment, you know, so even dietary changes and changes in your routine can happen with that. And then if there's exacerbating symptoms or things that are persistent, then we delve in closer and start focusing more on that.
Mm-hmm. Is there specific ways to support the liver and support the immune system other than what you already mentioned? Something else people should know about?
Yes. Yes. Look into milk thistle. Milk thistle is an amazing, it's the best support, liver support that at least I've found in all of my from all my teachers. And I don't believe it's contraindicated during pregnancy. I haven't found anything like that. And dandelion, like if play it really safe, dandelion during pregnancy is amazing because it too, if you can use the whole plant, you can use the leaves in your salad or cook them up, you know, make a little like egg souffle out of them. They're delicious, a little bit bitter. You can also use the root and make syrups out of that. And so if you're, it's an amazing liver support, which also helps with constipation, which is another thing we experience a lot in pregnancy, because it stimulates the digestive system and keeps things going. So dandelion is your friend, especially, you know, if you're pregnant at, you know, springtime, which is a great time to be pregnant. You could go out, yeah, and harvest what you want. It's so funny because some people just work so hard to get them out of their yard, but and then plant them actually in their gardens, but they're all right there, ready and available for you.
Right.
And that's the kind of medicine I like, is to be able to go outside and find something that's going to benefit you.
And I like the dandelions also because they are good for bees. They're one of those first things that show up to provide food for bees. And I keep bees, so.
Yeah. That's awesome.
With the bees. Now, this is an interesting connecting the dots that I just had. So you mentioned that you want to stay away from stuff that are laxative and stimulating, which would be, you know, something that red clover does. But we do have constipation during pregnancy. So in that case, having a difference between, it's interesting to draw the difference between something that helps constipation and something that is laxative. Let's talk about that a little more.
Right. Well, there's different types of laxatives too. There's a stimulating laxative that, you know, basically kind of irritates the bowel and gets it to let loose. And then there's like bulk laxatives that bring bulk and water into the bowel in order to push things through. Right. And then there's digestive aids like dandelion that increase liver bile and help to get the digestive system functioning more or higher or hotter, however you want to put that. So, so there's different types of laxatives. There's also a lot of other things you can try if you're constipated before you try herbs. So like walking, you know, getting plenty of exercise. And again, we have some cultural issues here with how we live our lives. You know, a lot of our jobs require us to be sedentary for a while, you know, and like most of the day. And also what we're fed is foods that don't necessarily help digestion. So again, going back to that, you know, if we were just eating, you know, from nature, we would probably already have dandelion as a part of our diet, right? So that wouldn't even be something we need to think about. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And because I think I definitely wanted to focus a bit on that, on the constipation issue, because that is a common symptom of that a lot of people experience when pregnant. So making sure they're hydrated, walking, even doing some like shaking the apple tree movements of just shaking that bottom.
Right. And then if you need a little more help, go for bulk laxatives like flax or psyllium seed. Some midwives are still known to use senna in small amounts, like if it's really a big deal and like mama really needs a lot of help. Then a little bit of senna every once in a while is considered safe. You could also find recipes to make a dandelion root and yellow dock syrup that will help to move things along. And also those would be really high in iron, so you'll get a double whammy with that one. And it'll help you
That was dandelion root and what?
Yellow dock. They're both extremely bitter. So yellow dock root is another thing you'd find on a walk in these parts. It's pretty common.
Cool.
So things to avoid laxative-wise are like aloe and cascara and buckthorn. Definitely castor oil. Don't drink castor oil when you're pregnant. But I think we know that. but they all act as like the stimulating the bowel. And if you stimulate the bowel, you're going to stimulate everything in that area.
But see, I didn't know aloe was something you wanted to stay away from.
Ingesting it, yeah.
Yeah.
But topically, it's probably fine, right?
Right. Different applications. It's not going to stimulate your bowels from your skin.
Right.
Yeah, but like the aloe, that's something that back to my Nana, whenever there's like, you have a sore throat or feel a cold coming on or just really, really cold throat discomfort, I make an aloe tea.
Yeah. And you can handle bitters more than anybody else. Aloe's very bitter. And I think that brings up another thing too. It's like, if you're in question of like, so you think this, everybody's told you, every source you've read has said this herb is safe, but you touch a little bit to your tongue and your body says, I don't think so. Just trust yourself. Don't do it. You know, an aloe for me would be one of those things. Like when I was pregnant, I wouldn't be able to eat that or make a tea out of it, you know? So there's that element of intuition that goes into things. Along with your very thorough research.
Yes.
I got to put that out there.
Yes. And even better, contact a certified herbalist to like guide you through this or take you on walks for foraging.
Absolutely. And can I touch a little bit on certified herbalist in our country? Anyway, would that be okay to spend a minute?
Absolutely. But let's take a break first then before jumping into that topic. We'll be right back. I remember being overwhelmed when trying to find a sitter for my daughter. It was hard to even know where to start, and so that's why I get excited about telling you about Care.com. Truthfully, I'm sad I never looked at this great resource back then. Care.com is the world's largest digital marketplace for finding and managing family care, and their website is set up to help you narrow down your choices around where you live, as well as provide tools like background checks, reference checks, qualifications, and certifications to make the process way easier. Now, I always thought that Care.com was only a place to look for babysitters, but it turns out that's just the start. Aside from someone to care for your kids, you can also find help for caring for your parents, your pets, your home, or even someone to run errands for you. It hit me that this can be such a game-changing resource during postpartum, and that's why I've even started telling my doula clients about Care.com. When perusing their website, I was impressed by how much I could narrow down my search. I could search for nannies and babysitters or date night sitters, after school sitters, special needs care, tutoring and lessons, even daycare centers. After I chose the type of care I was looking for, I was asked how soon I needed the care, with options being within a week, within a month, or right now. Right now, knowing how crazy and last minute life gets, that can be a lifesaver. Other search choices include minimum years of experience and a long list of other must-haves, such as being comfortable with pets, non-smoker, have reliable transportation, or be trained in CPR. After putting in all my info, Care.com came up with plenty of options right near my zip code. You can join Care.com for free as a basic member and start searching for great local caregivers. Once you upgrade to premium membership, then you can reach out to them, schedule interviews, do background checks, and even book and pay for care online through their app. As a Birthful listener, you can save 30% off a Care.com premium membership by visiting care.com/birthful before you subscribe. That's care.com/birthful for 30% off a premium membership. And we're back talking with Kathleen Mignolo about herbs. So, yes, tell me about certification, herbalist certification in our country, you said?
Yes, and there's other countries like Australia that have an actual herbal program or certification for herbalists. So unless in our country somebody has a degree in Chinese medicine and acupuncture or Ayurveda, then your herbalists are going to be either self-taught or have gone through many certification programs. So it doesn't necessarily make you a certified herbalist. It just means that you got a certificate from learning from these people over here and another certificate from learning from these people over here. But like the term certified herbalist, I think, is a little deceptive. And I just wanted to touch on that, that that's in the United States, there's the American Herbalist Guild that gives guidelines for what an herbalist should have learned at a certain point in order to practice such and such. But there is no like set course of study that an herbalist would be deemed, you know, a certified or have a degree in herbalism.
Gotcha. So yes, that's an important distinction. And also, like we say with any podcast that I do that relates to anything that you might ingest, make sure you also include your care provider in the conversation.
Yes, please. Please do that. And it would be great to just continue to get them involved in these types of conversations, you know, so that we can maybe possibly work together and build confidence in each other.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely.
There's a lot of benefit on both sides.
Indeed. So we talked about red raspberry leaf tea, and that's something that comes up a lot. And people, you know, if you Google red raspberry leaf tea and pregnancy, you're going to get tons of articles talking about using it for natural induction. Don't do it in the first, you know, don't have it at all during pregnancy. It's going to bring in contractions. It's really good if you use it during your whole pregnancy. There are conflicting points of view there. What do you think people should know about red raspberry leaf tea?
To start, I used red raspberry leaf before, during, and after my pregnancy without a break. You know, that's me. And I am, you know, instead of, again, referring to myself as a certified herbalist, I am an herbal educator, you know, so I'll give you that piece of information. I'll also give you the information that a lot of the fear that surrounds red raspberry leaf is another one of those studies back in 1954, where they applied isolated compounds to uterine tissue of guinea pigs and frogs. And some had major relaxation effects and some serious contractive effects. And so this is where the warning about red raspberry leaf during pregnancy comes from. Now, again, it's one of those plants that you probably couldn't drink that much tea in order to get those amounts of those compounds that are going to affect you in that way during pregnancy. But that being said, if you're prone to miscarriage, if you're concerned at all, if you, you know, don't want to take any chances, just avoid it during your first trimester. There's enough time to build up your uterus with it and have it be effective if you want to start in your second and third trimester. Some women don't even start it till 32 weeks. But it is an amazing plant. Women have been using for centuries. It's a uterine tonic. It can improve labor outcomes. It can reduce the need for intervention and the chances of hemorrhaging. You could just do 1 to 3 cups a day of tea. So a tea is a nice light way to get it into your body. So it also has this fragrine, which is an alkaloid, which tones the reproductive organs. So it has a very specific purpose with the uterus and other reproductive organs that many other plants don't. And it also has iron and niacin, manganese, calcium, potassium, phosphorus, and vitamins B, C, and E. So you've got a whole world of benefit from using it. And you had a podcast with a nutritionist that, you know, weighed these benefits to, you know, consequences using food. And it's the same with herbs. Like, you know, do we want to, out of fear, not use red raspberry leaf because, you know, somebody told us it could cause miscarriage? Or, you know, are we going to relax about it and know, you know, just maybe second or third trimester, accept it as this wonderful thing that can give us a lot of the nutrients and other benefits that we need, like the toning of the uterus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that I'll link to on the show notes to that episode. That was with Lily Nichols on pregnancy and nutrition.
Right.
But of course, this makes me think that red raspberry leaf tea would be almost a highly recommended for everybody during postpartum when your uterus has gone through that enormous stretch and then you're, you know, wanting to tone everything back up.
Right, absolutely. And what a smart thing, too, that it includes all these things you need to help make milk, you know? So there's that aspect of it, too. Great postpartum herb.
And I do want to talk more about postpartum stuff. But before we jump into that, one last thing related, I guess two things related to pregnancy. GBS. Right.
Yes. So,
yes, GBS. Yes. Oh, my God. Because so in the U.S., we do have the approach to GBS is that every single person who's pregnant gets tested for it. And if you are positive, then the treatment is to have antibiotics prophylactically during labor.
Right.
Which is great to target the GBS and minimize the risk of baby getting an infection. However, it also harms your microbiome and your baby's microbiome, which there's so much importance to that microbiome and seeding it at the moment of birth. So once you're GBS positive, you're GBS positive, you most likely are going to get antibiotics. Is there anything that can be done to minimize your GBS colonization to prevent it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are things. And also, because I've had some clients that, like, I tested positive for GBS. Am I dirty? And I really want to emphasize that you are not. It is a regularly occurring organism that lives in our intestinal tract and can colonize in the vagina. And it comes and goes. So you could test positive for GBS 1 week, and then a few weeks later, without doing anything, test negative. This doesn't mean there's nothing inherently wrong with you. So it's a group B strep, or Streptococcus agalactae. It's it comes and goes. It's found in 15 to 30% of women. They culture positive for it. Most healthy babies colonize the bacteria, and only 1 to 2% would develop the infection. So, but there are still like 1,600 cases and 80 deaths a year, despite the use of prophylactic antibiotics. So you would want to do something anyway, not just to avoid the antibiotics, but maybe you want to take that extra step, you know, of antibiotics do change the trajectory of our health and we want to avoid them. But if it can reduce your risk of your baby dying, that one baby is 100% when it's yours, right? So I don't advocate for the use of antibiotics, but I do think they have their place. And I understand, I do understand the medical approach. It's a very, very small percentage of babies that will develop an infection, but when it's yours, it's everything, right?
Right.
So there's that. But you can culture and you can do a protocol through a couple weeks before you test for your GBS. And then you can continue after and through your pregnancy if you'd like to. And one of the best things to do, women are like, what, is a carefully peeled garlic clove. And you can insert it into the vagina 2 to 3 inches with your finger, and you sleep that way and you take it out the next day. You want to be very careful when you peel it. You don't want to expose the juices because garlic can burn your skin. It's very powerful. So that's one approach. You can also make suppositories, and you can find probiotic suppositories. You can take an oral probiotic that will help you. My rule of thumb is to find a good refrigerated one that has lactobilicus in it. There's a couple different strands, and those are specific to vaginal health and balancing out the flora in the vagina. And fermented foods are a good way to get probiotics, eliminating sugar and junk food. So again, we have these lifestyle changes that we need to make. And then you can make other vaginal suppositories with herbs to insert into the vagina. And you can alternate that, you know, a couple nights with the garlic clove and a couple nights with the suppositories. And you'd want to include antimicrobial herbs like golden seal, and some practitioners recommend myrrh. So you would make and you can get suppository molds online. They're really easy to find, or you can make them out of aluminum foil, and you would use cocoa butter and, you know, a specific recipe. It's easy to find if you looked this up, but you'd use cocoa butter and calendula oil and then some powdered antimicrobial herbs, and insert those into the vagina. Make sure you wear a pad in your underwear because they will melt and come out. But that's one way to keep and balance your vagina and keep it, you know, bacteria free. However, we don't want to necessarily ingest those things, for some of them are toxic, but also if you're eating garlic to kill the bacteria, it's going to work similarly to an antibiotic. You're just going to kind of get rid of everything. And that's why the suppositories are important instead of ingesting antimicrobials and antibiotics.
Right. Because in that case, it's only altering the microbiome of your vagina and not necessarily your gut and your everything else.
Right. Exactly.
And then there's the consideration of, you know, what resonates with you and what would you do? Like, to me, I think messing with the microbes in general, not just the DBS, but, you know, all it is antibacterial. So it's like putting antibiotics directly, or very natural antibiotics, but directly in your vagina. And I'm like, well, you're messing with too many things. So personally, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it. But I am a big proponent of the probiotics. And there have been some initial studies that point that probiotics can be a really good thing, which, you know, it's one of those things like, do we need the studies to tell us this? But we kind of do.
Some people really need that.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah.
I think it's important to know also that, like, the environment that promotes Group B strep colonization is the same kind of environment that is loved by Candida.
Uh-huh.
So
thus the reducing sugar and junk food.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to that point that you made of, you know, figuring by lessening those foods, you are lessening both the candida that can cause yeast infections and thrush. And
right. And creating the environment that you want. That you want for yourself and that you want for your baby internally and externally, you know. The back to the nourishment part of it too, and the prevention, instead of like attacking an organism that has been on our planet for billions of years, you know, because these bacteria, they are our building blocks. Instead, like, create and host what you want to be there, you know, with using a good probiotic, or for, you know, eating the right things, and you know, using the nourishment aspect of it instead of the battling one. But there are options if there's something that you really feel you need to do. And if you do test GBS positive, and because once you test GBS positive, if you are being treated in the hospital, even if they tested you again, they're going to treat you as though you are positive. So, like, you are going to, they're going to require you to use antibiotics. But you can still go that extra mile, right, to ensure that your baby doesn't get a GBS infection by treating yourself with herbs. There are also secondary GBS infections that are beyond your control. And I want to put that out there too, that, you know, like 45% of this hospital staff have it on their skin somewhere, right? So we are in constant exposure to it. It's just kind of how it is, but you can take these extra precautions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I will link in the show notes also, Evidence-Based Birth has a thing about GBS and the effects on the microbiome. And I find it, from a person who had GBS and took the antibiotics at the time, and because this was like so many gazillion years ago, we did not know about microbiome that much, so I didn't take any probiotics.
Did you say millions of years ago?
I said gazillions.
Oh, that's a lot better.
Sorry. In pregnancy terms, it's gazillions. It's like dog years.
You're absolutely right.
That it was encouraging to me to read about the studies that they've done, that if you are otherwise like exclusively breastfeeding and being proactive about other ways to improve the microbiome of your child, and because usually the penicillin used for GBS treatment is a narrower spectrum. They found that after about a year, the kids had about their microbiomes kind of leveled out. So for people who get really, really scared and go like, this is going to be the end of, you know, I'm ruining my baby's health for life. Well, you're not.
Right. And you can do probiotics for your baby too. Once they come out, you can, there's a probiotic infant powder you can put on your nipples while you're nursing. And that will help to rebalance and reestablish gut flora. There's other ways too, I'm sure. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Go and research.
Yes.
Yes.
So, please do your research.
And I do want to delve into postpartum. And I know where I'm looking at the time and going like, huh, where? How much are we going to talk about this? But I did want to make sure we mention nausea commonly. Mention nausea because it's such a big thing that happens
common
to most
thing.
People. Yeah, common thing during that first trimester. Do you have like quick thoughts on nausea and how to minimize it?
Quick thoughts on nausea. Avoid triggers. Eat small amounts lots of times a day. Explore acupuncture and hypnosis. If you want to use herbs, ginger root. There's a lot of studies done with ginger root. It's one of those that there's actual studies on. But up to 1 gram a day. Beyond that, it has, may have an emetogenic or abortifacient effect. So, you know, but it is safe within that limit. So up to 1 gram a day. You can use powder or get crystallized ginger. Lemon. I found lemon is amazing. And it, we consider lemon an herb. It does a lot of really cool things. It's a plant. But even smelling it can help with nausea, if not tasting it or putting it in your water and sipping on that. You know, sip your water, don't down it. Small amounts of peppermint tea. Just sipping on the peppermint tea can help. Or smelling the peppermint essential oil. Right? You don't necessarily want to put the essential oil on you, so put it on a cotton ball and put it in a little jar and then just carry that around with you and sniff it whenever you start feeling nauseated. And again, back to dandelion. The dandelion root is a tea or a tincture, can help your digestive system kind of settle and do, you know, come into balance and do the right thing. So that can help with it too. So you could do any combination of those. Lemon ginger is really yummy.
Yeah.
If you don't like the taste of dandelion, put a little bit of lemon in there. That's nice too.
Yeah. I had somebody on the podcast at one point recommend that make, I'm glad you brought up a lemon because they were like, carry a lemon in your,
yes,
in your bag and just smell it as you go.
That saved my life, my first pregnancy.
Yeah. Cool.
And right. Then also just like eat what you can, you know, don't that first, especially that first trimester, if you can't stomach much, you know, try, but like, please just eat what you can in small amounts. It's chocolate cake. Then take a bite of chocolate cake.
Yeah. On that note, let's move on to postpartum.
Chocolate cake.
Chocolate, exactly.
That's my herb for postpartum.
So postpartum, we talked about red raspberry leaf tea. What are some other things that are good to do?
Continue with the everybody needs this tea. Do the nettle. Nettle, instead of it being a galactagon, it's a nutritive. It has all the things, you know, the alphabet soup of vitamins. It's got all the stuff you need. And so it will help to increase your milk supply, right? It'll also make you feel better because you're nourished, right? So and as an infusion, it keeps you hydrated, which you need to do when you're nursing. I think, you know, teas and postpartum depression can go hand in hand. And as a community, we can help with this. And this is my little soapbox, right? So if you're a woman or a person, but women need each other, and you know a mama that's just had a baby or that's nursing, go make some tea and sit with them and have tea with them and include in their tea things that will help their mood. Like St. John's wort in small amounts is fine while you're nursing. Lemon balm. Lemon balm is a great mood lifter and it's a nervine. So it'll help to soothe a new mama. It's so stressful in postpartum, right? To have this new life and things you need to, all these new responsibilities and there's no handbook and, you know, where's my tribe? So like becoming a tribe and plants can help us come together as a tribe and do these little rituals like making tea for each other and sharing it and sitting there. And then healing the perineum, you know, we have these topical herbs. And I also make a postpartum herbal bath And it contains comfrey, which is a vulnerary, which helps heal the skin, and a demulcent. So it would soothe any irritated or inflamed tissues. The uva ursi I put in there, a lot of people use it for UTIs, and I put it in there as urinary antiseptic and astringent. Calendula, I had my teachers at Heartstone, they had a phrase that when in doubt, calendula, it's like everything. It has antifungal, antibacterial, antimicrobial properties, as well as being soothing and nutritious. You know, it has all the things. So, and it's a beautiful flower. I think it's just a lovely plant to have a relationship with. Then you have yarrow, which is also an antiseptic. And shepherd's purse is in it, which helps to close down blood vessels to help reduce any bleeding. So these postpartum herb baths are not necessarily just for your perineum and healing up any tears, but also for getting in the bathtub and letting the medicine get in through your skin. It helps to shut things down. And the shepherd's purse will help any bleeding in the uterus to start to slow down as well. And then oat straw, which I mentioned before. And a lot of these are just, they're just common things and they're just really simple. And the oat straw helps to soothe the nervous system, which is, I can't emphasize that enough. Have I emphasized it enough during this podcast?
Take a breath. Calm down. You're so excited with this. And back to the ritual, the fact that it's an herbal bath. So you make a big pot of, like, walk us through what you do to prepare this herbal bath. Like if you're using it, not you making it, but a pregnant person or a postpartum person that's going to use it.
Right. So you can make your own or you can contact me. I have a jar up in various places around town. I'd be happy to mail them. So you would take your postpartum herb bath. And you would boil, please don't boil your herbs. All these aerial parts of the plant are very delicate. So you boil your water first. You can do, you know, 3 or 4 quarts even and throw this big bag of herbs in there and cover it. Covering your infusions is very important because a lot of your volatile oils, the medicinal parts of the plant will escape through steam. So you cover it and you let it sit for 30 minutes to a couple hours even. And it can sit there longer. Whatever bath, if you're not ready to use it, you can refrigerate it until right after the birth. You can freeze some of it, right? So did you get the part about the pads?
No.
Okay. So once this infusion is made, you can make compresses, cold compresses, which I know that there's some conflict of ideas about putting cold on the yoni after birth or anytime anyway, but some women like to have an ice pack. so you can take this infusion and put it on some all natural organic pads, please, because there's a lot of chemicals found in feminine products. And you can put those in your freezer. You can lay them on a cookie sheet and put them in the freezer and let them freeze up. And then when you're ready to use them, let them thaw a little bit and even put a barrier there before you put them on your labia and your perineum. And then you can also take this infusion and pour it into the bathtub and mama and baby can get into the bathtub and the herbs in it will help to soothe and comfort the mama and baby and also help to shut things down, which is a nice ritual. Like we were talking about rituals. That's a really beautiful ritual in and of itself. So that's the postpartum herb bath in a nutshell.
Yay.
And baths are important. They're just as important as tea.
That's a whole, like, another hour long conversation.
Another hour, yes.
Yeah. And I want to say, like, mama, if you want to be selfish, get in the bath by yourself. You don't have to get in there with your baby. If you're feeling a little touched out and just want that calm, or if it's really nurturing to you to do it with your baby, then do it with your baby. Like, whatever feels good to you.
Right. But it's safe with baby, but absolutely. Right. If you just need a minute, because goodness, you just did something big. Please take that time for yourself, of course.
Awesomeness. So, yeah. What else? Is there something we're forgetting for postpartum that would be helpful? Something you need to stay away from during postpartum also?
Well, there are still you know, the same is true for postpartum. There's herbs that you wouldn't want to use. And, we, you know, we would also, we had talked about galactagogues briefly and why they might not be a good idea.
So wait a second. Galactagogues, let's define what the term is. I know we've mentioned it a couple times, but yeah.
Galactagogues are herbs that are going to increase your milk supply. Some of them stimulate the letdown reflex, and some of them just build up milk supply. But you can do this too. Galactagogues themselves, the ones that stimulate the letdown reflex, can become, you can form a dependency on them, and over time they won't be as effective. So certainly after you've tried nourishment with the nettle and the raspberry leaf, after you've tried these things and diet, proper diet and lots of fluids, then if you still need some help, some fenugreek or fennel seed, I just would chew a little bit of fennel seed every once in a while and it would help. But it's not something to use all the time because of the dependency, I think, that you can't, don't want to rely on it. And the, really the best way to get your milk going is to nurse your baby. Often.
Yeah, have those stimulate that response signal through the actual baby lactating.
Right.
Yeah, latching on. And it's funny because every time, I mean, my goodness, every time I talk about lactation and latching, like we're talking about this, my nipples are tingling.
Right. And it's been a gazillion years since then.
Gazillion.
Yes.
So I love it. Nourish first, hydrate, put baby to the breast a lot, lots of skin to skin. And then if you're still needing extra help, go to the additional things like chewing on some fennel seeds.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But the things, you know, the tea, the food grade stuff that could be a part of your daily life, like nettle, are going to help you with that. You know, raspberry leaf is probably going to help you with that. So avoid sage, you know, that might dry things up a bit. And there are a list of herbs that are not good for postpartum, for nursing, you know, that you might not want your baby to ingest. But that's, I did not write that list, but you can find it easily.
Mm-hmm. And if you happen to have a link that you want to send to me, I'll put it on the show notes.
Okay, I can do that.
Awesome. And we're almost out of time, but there was one thing that we were like, should we talk about this? Should we not talk about this? But let's do it. Let's briefly talk about inductions.
Okay. We will briefly talk about inductions. And what I really want to say about induction from the beginning is, why do we feel we need to find ways to induce a process that the body is naturally designed to do? Now, that being said, in our culture, we have a lot of situations, and it happens very frequently, where we want to try to get things going in order to either avoid a medical induction, or it's a mama's right if she's really uncomfortable or something's going on with baby. You know, there are circumstances where it's a better alternative or even necessary.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, right. And yeah, we all know that there's these artificial constraints that are being put on how long you can be pregnant. And that's unfortunately a reality you have to navigate, and can be really stressful if you're looking at an induction date of next Thursday. And then that anxiety is not going to help you go into labor.
Right. Exactly. You need to relax. We need to be able to relax to have successful labors and even enjoyable, you know, experiences. The pressure takes a lot of what could be very joyful out of what we're experiencing and doesn't allow us to be fully present. So, you know, I think a very patient approach to an herbal or natural induction methods is more proper, although women for centuries and midwives forever have been exploring and recommending castor oil. That seems to be the one thing that people swear by the most. However, in my experience, I've seen it go both ways, but I've also seen it be very uncomfortable and very messy for mama too. So it's not my first go-to. I think lots of sex is my first recommendation to get things going. And also acupuncture would be another way. But to get things going from the ground zero, herbally, you know, after, you know, if you want to try some things, you want some herbs that stimulate oxytocin to get your uterus contracting, but also herbs that support the relaxation of the uterus. And red raspberry leaf tea, there's an age-old recipe of making a very, very, very strong infusion that does both of this, right? So you drink that, you know, like a really strong cup of red raspberry leaf a couple times. And a lot of women swear by that. And
what would a very strong infusion look like?
Oh, gosh. So a normal infusion is 1 teaspoon of dried herb to 8 ounces of water. So a really strong one, you could quadruple the herbs and drink that. You know, so 4 tablespoons of dried herb to 8 ounces of water. And
okay,
but you can, yeah. Yes. Does that help? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if you're doing leaves themselves, so not dried, how would that, the regular normal infusion?
If you're doing
what's
a fresh
the recipe
plant?
For? Yeah, fresh plant. Ugh, it, I can't talk anymore.
I just cram, if I'm using a fresh plant of anything, I just kind of cram the jar full of it and add, I wish, this is my Italian upbringing. You just shove it all in there and pour hot water over it. It's not very professional, but it is, because the fresh plant already holds so much water that, and also, I mean, there's benefits to using a dried plant, but if all you have is fresh, then just load up your jar as, you know, full as you can get it and pour in water. And again, cover your infusions and let them sit for, you know, 30 minutes to a couple hours. But the dried plant also breaks up the cell walls and allows more of the plant to be exposed to the water, and the water can more easily extract the medicine. So, you know, either way. But fresh plants are beautiful and amazing and have their own things that have gotten lost in the drying process. So, you know, there's ups and downs to both. Yep. And I think that I want to say too, with, I don't know how much time we're having, but if you want to try castor oil, try it in a pack. A castor oil pack is when you would take a flannel cloth and soak it in castor oil, and you put that on, you know, where your uterus would be or wherever you're experiencing discomfort, and then put a plastic bag over that, and then apply a warm, not too hot, right? Because you don't want it anything too hot next to your baby's head, and let that just soak in. And you can, this could be a few day process. So instead of being in a hurry, just really relax and coax your baby out and do some of these things. And the castor oil can get in through the skin. And I think that's a lot easier way for a body to handle if you wanted to try that route. And then in conjunction with a cotton root tincture, which it will stimulate oxytocin production in the body and start causing the uterus to contract. And there's been a lot of luck, a lot of success with the combination of cotton root and the ingestion of castor oil. But I would like to say that I think it's possible, if give yourself more time, to do the packs, the castor oil packs, and see how that works for you first. One thing I think I would – oh, do you want to say something?
Yeah, no, I was going to just say that the unpredictability and possible violence of just doing the castor oil, it's one of those things that, you know, you took it and it could go both ways. Mm-hmm. And it can make you really miserable and act really quick and just make your uterus cranky.
Right.
So it's contracting, but that doesn't mean that necessarily it's effective contractions for labor. But it could also just hit labor and have it go. So, yeah, it's a difficult one to qualify.
Right, exactly. And it's also, it's not oxytocin. It's a stimulating laxative, and it does that because there's toxins in it that stimulate the bowel and make you want to get it out, right? So that's why it starts to make your uterus contract and stimulate the uterus, because it's just trying, your body's trying to purge, which is it's an interesting place to be when you're trying to bring life into the world, you know? And like you said, it can go either way. Some people swear by it, you know, would never do anything different, and others wish they would have never touched it, so...
Yeah.
And I think I want to mention one herb that women have used for a very long time, but that has had some pretty serious consequences regarding induction, is blue cohosh. It can manifest, if you use too much of it, as like a nicotine poisoning. And so we start to see cardiac issues with mama and baby. And so it's not a safe way to go unless you're being monitored by a doctor or midwife that's willing to, you know, monitor you and baby's heart during that time. So there have been incidences of mamas trying to self-induce using blue cohosh, and the amounts that you'd have to use to get labor going really require you to be monitored. So please take that into consideration. But in the past, a combination of blue and black cohosh would provide the stimulating effects and the relaxation effects that your uterus would need in order to have a good contraction pattern and get things going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that warrants the mentioning again that herbs can be powerful medicine. Mm-hmm. So treat it as, have the reverence and respect for them, and research and figure out how they communicate with you. You know, what effects a certain plant has in your body. That requires some, that communication, it requires some exploration, it requires a partnership.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does. The respect and reverence. That's a good way, good words to use. Absolutely.
Kathleen, if people want to get in touch with you or know more about what you're doing or figure out getting some baths from you, how can they do that?
Well, you can find my website. It's KathleenMugnolo.com. That's pretty easy. You can email me at KathleenAMugnolo@gmail.com. Do I need to spell it, or will my name be?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you could spell it. Yep.
It's KathleenAMugnolo@gmail.com. And I don't know about putting my phone number out here, but you can find that on my website as well.
Yeah, and the website is the same spelling, but without the A, because that's for your, yeah, so just Kathleen Mugnolo is MUGNOLO.
MUGNOLO, right. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much for doing this today. It's always lovely to talk to you.
I always love talking to you too, and I really appreciate it. It was fun.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as @birthful, so come say hi. And if you're in the last months of pregnancy and feeling unprepared for going home with a new baby, then go register for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com, so you can get ready and even enjoy those first few weeks with your baby. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at care.com and Expectful. Go to care.com/birthful for 30% off your premium membership, and go to expectful.com/birthful for a free month trial. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts for parents and families. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.